If you're active in the online gaming community, there's a chance you may have encountered clips or screenshots of a game called Y2K, a postmodern RPG. While it flew a bit under the radar after its release in January 2019, the game quickly became the butt of many jokes and the center of several controversies. It didn't take long for my circle of friends to start sharing these clips in our group Discord. Every time one of us would discover something ridiculous about the game, we'd post it in the chat, laugh at it for a bit, and then move on with our lives. It became a gift that kept on giving. That is, until recently. Several of my friends and I have decided to play through Y2K, chapter by chapter, and then record a podcast after completing each one. But before I started playing, I wanted to learn about the development team behind the game, Axe Studios, so that we could talk about them on the first episode of the podcast before digging into the game itself. For better or for worse, I ended up finding a lot more history than I bargained for. I quickly realized that it would be unfair to my co-hosts if I took up a bunch of time relaying all this information in the first episode, so I decided to create a separate introduction video. But before we dive into the history of Axe Studios, let's talk about the podcast's format. Think of this podcast like a book club of sorts. If you wish to take along for this adventure, you're encouraged to do so. If you'd rather sit back and just listen to us instead, that's perfectly fine too. We'll do our best to provide context when discussing the game. According to a quick Google search, Y2K has 6 chapters. We've given ourselves 2 weeks per chapter, with the deadline for Chapter 1 being June 29th. We'll be recording our podcast on that date, and it should be edited and uploaded shortly thereafter. After that, the deadline for Chapter 2 will be July 13th, and so on from there. With that one out of the way, here's all the information I could find about Axe Studios, the development of their games, and the rise of Y2K as an internet punching bag. I've done my best to be as comprehensive as possible, but as to be expected with online research, certain websites and social media posts have been lost to the sands of time. That being said, I've managed to piece together a loose history that should provide ample enough background for the rest of this podcast series. So, let's start from the beginning. In 2012, indie developer Brian Allinson created a Kickstarter for a Game Boy-inspired action-adventure game titled Two Brothers. He stated the game had been in development for a year and a half. He worked with a small team, which included his brother Andrew Allinson and would eventually include their sister Bridget Allinson. This team would later title itself Axe Studios. A modest goal of $6,000 was set for the game's completion. Two Brothers was going to release for PC and Xbox 360 in summer 2013, with the potential for Linux and mobile ports through a stretch goal. Another stretch goal promised the creation of a short prequel comic, which would be illustrated by Bridget. The Kickstarter raised slightly over $16,000 with the help of 779 backers. If you wanted a video game project crowdfunded in 2012, it was a great time to do so. Games such as FTL, Pillars of Eternity, Elite Dangerous, and Wasteland 2 all had successful campaigns during this time, among many others. With both stretch goals met, the game's development continued. Two Brothers would eventually be pushed back into an October 2013 release window. However, only a few days prior to its release, a critical progression blocking bug was discovered that pushed the release back by a few more weeks. When it finally came out, Two Brothers received mixed reception. While many praised the game for its nostalgic gameplay and immersive ambition, many others were quick to point out its lack of polish. Although combat and exploration were enjoyable, according to most players, numerous critics reported glitches that would lock up the game. Other criticism centered around the game's script. Several critics noted that it needed an editing pass due to its abundance of spelling and grammatical errors. A few players called out the game's writing because of its failure to communicate an objective, forcing players to wander around the map aimlessly until they stumbled onto progress. It should also be noted that the game was only released for PC, with the promised Linux, Xbox 360, and mobile versions nowhere to be found. Months would pass with little information, until E3 2014 rolled around. An updated version of Two Brothers was announced for the Wii U eShop, with a trailer even being uploaded to Nintendo's YouTube channel. This version of the game was titled Chromafor, the Two Brothers Director's Cut, and was set to come out on PC platforms as well. Chromafor was to be a major overhaul of the original game, one that would address the many bugs that plagued the original title. On top of this, owners of the original Two Brothers were promised a free copy of Chromafor when it came out. Overall, reception to this announcement was positive, despite the ambiguous status of the Xbox 360, Linux, and mobile versions of the game. While these ports never received an official cancellation, the focus on the game's Wii U release after Chroma 4's announcement is undeniable. As it turns out, this wouldn't end up mattering because Chroma 4 never actually came out for any platform. Updates would trickle out every few months. In 2015, X Studios stated that a partnership with a third-party firm had broken down and the resulting legal issues had taken away from development time. The game's new release window was set to be early 2016. In March, X Studios announced yet another delay, stating that Chroma 4 was 75% complete and would be released later in the year. Despite this, the game never materialized. The last update given was in May 2017, when the official X Studios Twitter account stated that the game was still set to release, despite the Nintendo Switch already being out by this point. In the 2 years since, the game has seemingly faded into obscurity. At some point, the original two brothers would be delisted from digital storefronts. As a result, the only way to currently play the game is by resorting to piracy. Despite this troubling situation, what little controversy there was surrounding Two Brothers was quickly overshadowed by the team's next game, Y2K. Project Y2K was first teased in early 2014, shortly after the release of Two Brothers but before the announcement of Chroma 4. The game was a throwback to classic JRPGs such as Earthbound, but portrayed in a 3D art style inspired by Mega Man Legends. Development was once again helmed by the Allinson brothers, with their sister Bridget later joining the team as an artist. Instead of opting for a Kickstarter like Two Brothers, the team instead created a prototype for PAX East 2014, where it would receive positive reception. Shortly after its showcase at the event, the game found a publisher. While originally announced for the Wii U, it would later be announced that Project Y2K would also be coming out for the PC, PlayStation 4, and PlayStation Vita. Eventually, the game's full name would be revealed, Y2K, a postmodern RPG. The project slowly developed a following of excited JRPG players who saw potential in a game that was an obvious love letter to some of their favorite titles. The game would continue to receive trailers and be showcased at events for years to come. During this time, the game would receive a sudden boost in attention when it was announced that the Secret of Mana composer, Hiroki Kikuta, would be contributing an arrangement for the game's soundtrack. This was followed months later with the news that Undertale creator Toby Fox would be composing a battle theme for the game as well. London musician Bowen would also contribute a few pieces to the game's soundtrack. Much like Two Brothers, Y2K would undergo multiple delays, though they would prove to be far more prevalent and long-lasting. As development progressed, the Wii U version was scrapped in favor of a Nintendo Switch port. The reasons for the game's long development would be made apparent in an article published by Variety on October 17, 2018. The article was written by Stephen T. Wright and was titled, In the Wake of Their Mother's Death, How Two Brothers Rebuilt Their Video Game. It describes the struggle the Allinson siblings found themselves in, having to develop an anticipated video game while also taking care of their dying mother, who lost her battle with pancreatic cancer at the age of 50. While the article never references Chroma 4's troubled development, this tragedy is likely to have played a role in its lack of release. Despite Y2K being 96% complete, the brothers would delay the game's development even further. In light of their mother's passing, the brothers found themselves dissatisfied with the game they had created. They spent the next few years rebuilding about 25% of the game from the ground up, including a complete rewrite of the game's ending. According to Andrew, this was done to better reflect the brothers' current worldview and to treat the game's darker subject matter more seriously. Y2K would finally be released on January 17, 2019, to mixed critical reception and highly negative general reception. For one thing, the game's PlayStation Vita port was pushed back and, as of this recording, has yet to release. Much like Two Brothers, critics would praise the game's ambition and a few clever gameplay ideas, but criticized its awkward script and a few glitches that hindered the experience. In the weeks and months to follow, it became popular for players to share screen caps and video clips of the game to mock its writing quality. Shortly after its release, Y2K would find itself surrounded by controversy. The game contains a subplot that was inspired by the real-life death of Elisa Lam. Elisa Lam was a mentally ill woman who tragically died under mysterious circumstances in 2013. The Elisa Lam case is popular in the online true crime community, in no small part due to a video of Elisa taken by an elevator security camera before her death. Her bizarre behavior in the footage, along with a few unresolved questions about the case, made it a highly sensationalized story that is still discussed online today in those circles. The case is too complex for me to cover in this podcast, so I've linked to the Wikipedia page in the description down below. I highly suggest you read it for more information. Andrew Allinson was one of the many people drawn to Elisa Lam's unfortunate death, and is open about its impact on Y2K. In a public comment that has since been deleted, the Axe Studios Reddit account wrote that the team was moved by the terrible case of Elisa Lam, and that her suffering was influential to the development of the game. This particular statement and the game's handling of the subject matter would become massive points of criticism in the weeks following the game's release. This would only be the first in a series of several controversies, however. Andrew Allinson would soon come under fire for showing up on right-wing podcast The Dick Show. This would be Andrew's platform to fire back against critics and express his anger at the game's negative reception. One particular quote from this interview would be spread wide on social media, in which Andrew states, "My mistake was thinking that video games are art. I wanted to make a game about a guy who's a piece of shit, unlikable character, who by the end of the game has to transform. But too many gamers, when they look at this, they immediately get triggered by it. So, the thing is, games aren't art, they're toys for children, and it's considered in bad form to talk about anything meaningful, impactful, or thought-provoking." Needless to say, this quote was openly mocked by many in the gaming community. A few weeks later, players found an instance of plagiarism in the game. Several lines of prose are directly taken from the Haruki Murakami novel After Dark, which Andrew had previously cited as an influence on the game. While Andrew claimed these instances were supposed to be references, the lack of attribution in the scene or in the game's credits cast doubt on this claim. That brings us back to the present and to this podcast. It's safe to say that the only reason that me and I'm sure most of my friends know about Y2K is because of people in our social media circles making fun of it. We're going into this game expecting to tear it apart, but I'm also excited to dig into Y2K as a cultural object. Y2K is supposed to be a referential love letter to 90s video games and the fandom surrounding them. It's a game made by nerds for nerds, allegedly. I'm curious to see how the game handles its nostalgic elements and what it can tell us about the current state of video game fandom. I'm also curious to see if the game tries in any meaningful way to experiment with the RPG genre, or if it's so dedicated to celebrating the past that it sticks to familiar mechanics, plot beats, and themes. I'm also excited to experience the game's writing as it was originally intended. It's one thing to see minor bits and pieces of the story on Twitter, but to take it all in over the course of an entire playthrough will be a different beast entirely. Frankly, I can't wait to discover for myself why this game evoked such a strong backlash when it released, and how I feel about it on a personal level when everything is said and done. At the very least, I hope my friends and I make the best of this experience and manage to have a bit of fun by the end of it. I'm excited to get this podcast started and for all of you to tag along with us on our journey. Thanks for listening, and have a good night.